Hey guys, I'm Bert with Dabbing with Washington Artists. The idea is simple. We have six dabs and six questions. So sit back, light your torches, as we sit down and interview the artists that make Washington, Washington.
I'm DeBray Caviani. This is Dabbing with Washington Artists. Check out my link tree. It's It's www.linktr.ee/DeBray Caviani.
For today's series of dabs, we'll begin our smoke session with a rainbow sorbet, a northern lights, and a chem dog, and we'll round out the session with a black diesel, an Acapulco gold, and a lemon frost.
Thank you for joining us today on Dabbing with Washington Artists. Today we are joined by DeBray Caviani. Thank you so much for joining us today, man.
Thank you for having me.
Right on, man. Well, all right, we're going to get into it today. We're going to start out with a rainbow sorbet.
Rainbow sorbet is an indica dominant hybrid with a distinct terpene profile of sage and fruitiness, and is known for its tendency to leave the smoker feeling creative and productive. We scored a gram of these sugar diamonds at a shop on 112th Avenue in Everett.
This is kind of like a sweet flavor to it. So, the first thing we like to ask everybody when they come through here is, what role does cannabis play in your creative process?
Cannabis in the creative process definitely is a starter for me. I like to smoke a sativa, so these types of strains are really good for getting the mind going and stuff like that, and being able to sort of get outside. I wouldn't say necessarily get outside your comfort zone, because cannabis definitely helps you get really inside the comfort zone. It definitely helps when it comes to thinking out ideas and stuff like that. Maybe, you know, I come into a song, into the writing process of a song, and I have an idea of where I want to go with it, but I can't quite flesh it out. Cannabis definitely, like, helps me open my thinking process, and definitely let go of some of the maybe sober constraints that I would have when it comes to writing music.
And you mentioned you like sativas, but do you have any favorite strains that you're really digging nowadays? Like,
favorite sativa strains nowadays? Gosh, it's really hard for me to remember what strains that I smoke are sativa, but
that's fair.
I hope it is Do-Si-Do.
Oh yeah,
Do-Si-Do is definitely like a
go-to. I'm pretty sure we've had that one on our show before.
Awesome, but Do-Si-Do is like a go-to strain for me. Like, I smoke that and it's like, boom, I'm ready.
So, for our second dab of the day, we've got Northern Lights.
Northern Lights is a classic indica-dominant strain with a unique taste of tangy spices and sugarcane, and its tendency to leave the smoker couch-locked and sedated. We found a gram of this terp dough at a shop on 88th Avenue in Linwood.
Yeah, I'm a big thing for a lot of these nostalgic strains, and some of them have been coming back recently.
The big one for me, I'd say, like, in terms of what I started with, is Blue Dream. Blue Dream and Northern Lights were like lit. Like, when I think about high school, I think about Blue Dream and Northern Lights, because my freshman year, my sophomore year, I wasn't a smoker. Like, right after my sophomore year of high school, I just started smoking weed, because me and my buddy, my best friend, we were in the same driver's ed class together.
Oh, yeah.
And so this is, like, the story. Like, do you guys actually have a question where you ask about the first time that I smoked weed? Because I'll hold on to this if you want.
No, if you want to, tell the story, feel free.
So we're in driver's ed class. Him and a couple of other buddies from high school are like, oh, we're going to go to the woods, right? Everybody's first smoking story is going to the woods. But it wasn't like real woods. It was just like up a hill and then some trees. Just call it the woods.
I mean, it's Washington. It's Washington. You can find the woods anywhere.
Pretty much. Any apartment complex, there's always some woods somewhere. But that was up the hill from where we were at Driver's Ed. So they're like, oh, we're going to go to the woods and hang out and, you know, chill. And I was like, oh, I'm going to come with. And they're like, okay, well, we're going to smoke. I was like, and they knew I was like, really like, oh, I don't want to smoke weed. I'm trying to be an athlete. But they were like, okay, well, we're going to go smoke weed. And I was like, I'll tag along. It's whatever. Like, you guys are my homies. Like, I'm not tripping. Like, I'm with safe people. Sure. Like, if you guys are smoking weed, I'm not going to trip about it. So we get up there and then obviously I'm getting interested and I'm watching them smoke weed. And I was like, okay, I'll take a mouth hit or whatever, where you like it, you pull it, but you don't inhale it and blow it out. And you're like, yeah, I'm smoking weed. So it was like, I did a mouth hit and I was like, that didn't feel gratifying. So I was like, I'm going to take a real hit. And so I took a real hit and first hit weed. I was like, dude, this shit's crazy. What is this? He was like, the Blue Dream. And I was like, all right, dope. So I know what I'm getting every time I want to smoke. So we do that. Couple hours later, I end up getting super fucking baked, and my mom was supposed to pick me up, and I was like, fuck, I'm super high. I don't know how to like hide it that I'm high. And I was like, dude, do I look high? I'm asking a bunch of stoners, do I look high? So it's like, no, you're good. So like I like call my mom and I'm like, hey, mom, like, where you at? How far away are you? Like, obviously, I feel like I sound super stoned on the phone. To this day, apparently she didn't know that I was stoned until I told her that I was stoned during it. But she comes and picks me up, and I'm like beforehand, like, so I was like, bro, like, Blue Dream, like, literally takes me back to kicking it with the homies. And then Northern Lights, like, the homie used to, he had weed. I'm not going to say he sold weed like that, but he had weed available to people. And so, like, whenever I would ask him if I could have some weed, he would always be like, I got Blue Dream, I got Northern Lights. And so it was, like, always the two strings that go back.
So second thing we like to ask everybody is, how has living in Washington affected your sound or your creative process?
Well, I've never lived outside of Washington, so...
So pretty heavily.
Pretty heavily. specifically... Seattle is on me.
That's awesome.
Like, you know,
I noticed that earlier. I was thinking that.
Born and raised in the city and the surrounding areas, been here my whole life, moved around in it my whole life. Washington is a big part of who I am. And especially, I think that if I had lived anywhere else besides one of the few states right now that weed is legal and stuff like that, and the culture towards marijuana is probably a little bit more, it's a little bit more lax than it is in other places, and where, you know, people really think the worst of people who smoke marijuana and stuff like that. And so I think living in Washington definitely influenced me to be more, I don't want to say open, because we're definitely, Washington's not a very open culture. We're the Seattle freeze is what we're known for.
I try not to participate in that.
I try not to as well, but you know, you end up being to yourself a lot, and sure, you know, moving in different ways that, you know, you're moving about throughout your creative process, and you just end up, you know, kind of just being by yourself a lot. And so but definitely as well, just to new thought ways, thought paths. I don't know how to express that sentiment, but just different ways of thinking, and definitely trying new things a lot. I think that that's definitely a stamp from Washington, because we really try to,
that's cool. We were just making sure it wasn't one of ours that went off just now.
You know, it's just different ways, trying new things. Always being open to trying new things, you know, experimentation. Definitely, that's a Washington stamp. Like, if you're from Washington or you've worked in Washington for a long amount of time, you get tired of doing the same thing over and over and over again. So you definitely want to experiment with everything that you do. And you don't always approach, even if it's something that seems similar to something you've done in the past, you may not approach it the same way. And I think that's definitely a big part of being a Washington artist and being around other Washington artists and people who are from this area, because we're not a big hub. You know, we kind of got to expand, especially in the hip hop scene. We're not considered like a hub for the genre. And so, like, when you're trying to do new things, you always experiment with different types of things that you hear from other places, or maybe you hear from even in your own city, because you want to be different.
So for this next one, we've got a good old Chem Dog.
Chem Dog is a well-balanced hybrid known for its rich diesel and skunky smell and taste, and tendency to leave the smoker euphoric and calm. We picked up a gram of these diamonds at a shop on Broadway in Everett.
Beautiful. So you get a little bit more confident with that thing, with the pick.
As I was hitting it, I was like, I'm starting to realize what I'm doing, but I'm also getting really high. I've always wanted to do a show, like, whenever I, when I found you guys, as you can see, I'm getting high because I'm starting to stumble on my words. When I found you guys and I was like, I totally want to do this interview if I'm able to do this interview. I was like, there's no way I'm passing up on the possibility. And even when I found out it was an Everett, because I stay right now, I stay all the way out south past Seattle right now. Mm-hmm. And so like it was like hour 45, it was not an hour and 45 minutes, it was like 45 minutes to an hour's drive. And so I was like, I don't care, I gotta do this. Because I've always wanted to do an interview where we progressively get super high and we talk about being an artist. Because to me, there's nothing more perfect than being a stoner artist.
So, for our next question here, so you have a new studio album, Everything You, that you just released. What can you tell us about it?
It's a project that really, I feel, encompasses the last 2 years of my life really good. There was a silence, so to speak, of me in the industry from releasing music since like 2019. Mm-hmm. And so I felt like, you know, I had to get my music back on the scene. And I also felt like I wanted to tell my story. A lot of things happened to me over the last 2 years that I felt like, you know, needed to be spoke on. But also I felt like just making music, especially after splitting from my group, it was a big thing for me to get back in the studio and start making music again, being confident in myself musically, because when I'm not putting out music, I feel like I'm not working hard enough, you know? I feel like I'm definitely not, like, you know, if there's nothing to promote that's relevant, at least, I'm not working hard enough and I haven't been doing my job. Because what to me is, music is like therapy for me. And so if I'm not putting out music or actively recording music and getting something out on the table just to listen to, excuse me, it's pertinent for me just because I want to be updated. I know there's people out there who listen to me and actually create music for me. I'm not a huge artist, but I know that there's people who actually do listen to me pretty passionately. And so it's like, you know, I want to keep them updated as to, because my music is very real. It's very personal to me. And whenever I put something in the music, I believe in it. And it's very, 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 very true to what I've been going through as a person. And so it's like, you know, when people listen to that music, I hope that there's people that, you know, relate to it, or that maybe I touched on something that might help them get through something that they're going through. And so, you know, knowing that there's people that actually like want to hear from me and want to hear a release from me is just like, you know, I need to keep that up on my end as an artist. But then on the personal side, it's just like, I want to just be able to share what I've been going through. Because if I'm not sharing what I've been going through in at least some creative form, I feel like I get too bottled up inside.
Sure.
Like, oh, yeah. I definitely can't. Like, I can't even function as a person if I'm not getting some sort of
release.
You feel me? And that's what music is for me. It's my release. It's my way to my way to deal with the things that I've been going through. And at the same time, maybe somebody out there relates to it and I can help them get through something that they're going through.
All right. So we're at the halfway spot now. And we're going to be wrapping up with some sativas here. So the first one we got is a Black Diesel.
Black Diesel is a sativa-dominant hybrid with a rich and complex taste of diesel, pepper, and sour fruit, and it's known for its tendency to leave the smoker energetic and charged without feeling jittery. We found a gram of this wax at a shop on 72nd Avenue in Tacoma.
Okay, so you've been making music since your childhood and have released multiple full albums. How would you say you have changed and developed as an artist over the years and between albums?
That's a great question. Honestly, I guess the only way I can say that I've developed through my music is definitely just every time that you listen to me from first to last, the first thing I've done to the last thing I've done is always growth. I always feel like I get better as a person. I get better as an artist. I start to come to more of an understanding of, I guess, my humanness and my person, my place in the world. And so definitely, I would just say growth. Growth is always something that you're going to see from me as an artist, no matter when you hear something. You can always put I can't think of it right now, but you can always look at something and see that I've gotten better from one point to another.
Yeah.
And in different ways, different shapes, different forms, but I'm always getting better. And I always feel like that's something that's important for artists and for me as a person. It's just definitely trying to grow every time I do anything.
All right. So moving on here, we're getting to the tail end. We've got an Acapulco Gold. And this one's, I think, my second favorite in the lineup here. But it's pretty nice. And we're out on a sativa adventure now. So
it's butter, too.
That's kind of what it tastes like to me, honestly, actually. Is like, it tastes buttery, sort of.
Can't give a big man buttery taste.
It almost kind of reminds me of like popcorn or something.
It's gonna be a movie.
All right, so we got a meaty one here. So your song, "The Thug Cry," or "Thug Cry," excuse me, has strong political undertones, which is a deviation from a lot of the rest of the album. What can you tell us about your motivations and message in this piece?
So, I was sort of at the middle. I wasn't directly involved in the situation, but the situation did cause my group to sever.
Okay.
And so, what happened was my manager and also one of my best friends, one of my day one homies, had the police called on him by my groupmate for what he says at this point, from what I've heard, is what he says is that he didn't like the way that he was speaking to him or it was aggressive to him. There's also a lot of rumor. I don't know exactly what happened the night before. From my standpoint, the night before, there was a birthday party held for my manager and best friend. And people got drunk, tempers got raised. You know, from my standpoint, what I saw was he was rude at most. I've said this before. I don't want to say it too many times. I don't want to speak on it as much. But that situation then caused the next night when he came to return some stuff for the police to be called on him. I was told by my groupmate that he said he was in fear for his life. And then by way of him being in fear for his life, that I was endangering his life. A lot of semantics and stuff like that. It didn't make sense. But at the middle of it all, the center of it all, is moral standpoint of when this happened was at the tail end of the George Floyd protest summer.
Okay.
And so we all knew like there is not a good relationship between the police and the black community.
Yeah.
We are seen as a threat on site rather than a person who may be in need of help or a situation that can be figured out without escalating. You feel me? So that's how I was feeling about it. I got angry and on the phone with my groupmate, and he said that because I was being
loud on the phone with him and mad and angry. Of course, obviously, I'm angry that a black man called the police on another black man over some stuff that could have been handled completely differently.
Yeah, handled simply.
You feel me? Any sort of, there's a million different ways that it could have been handled, and it was not handled properly in any way, shape, or form. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm coming from. And then following that, to be basically, I was blocked on all social media platforms and gaslighted without, you know, the power to defend myself.
Wow.
And yeah, so, that's messed up. You know, I'm hearing all of this stuff from other people that he's saying about me. And I'm, to me, this is a private situation. It didn't have to be made public. He's making it public. So for me, I felt that my stance was, I'm not going to go on social media and make a rah-rah, you know, mm-hmm. gather support for me. I'm going to take it to the music where I'm going to put it all there. I'm going to bare my soul. From my standpoint, this is what happened, you know, from what I'm hearing. You called the police. You didn't want to talk about it. You blocked me. You talked about me behind my back. I'm hearing, you know, a whole bunch of stuff. You know, there's money problems and copyright issues, you know, threatens of taking me to court for things that he wouldn't be able to stand in court for. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on up to the point where I wrote the song. But also at the same time, I wanted to not only address the problem, but also to speak on the way that, like I said before, the black community is viewed by the mm-hmm. police. It's a very privileged thing to call the police on somebody.
Yeah.
Without, you know, that's your first instinct. You know, that's how I'm going to handle the situation. I'm going to call the police. To be able to call the police is privilege. We don't feel that we have the ability to call the police because something's going to be mishandled when we call the police, even if it's to protect mm-hmm. ourselves.
Yeah.
We've seen it happen. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So for me to put that in the music as well and then talk about, you know, everybody, you know, there's people that I mentioned Huey P. Newton, you know, I mentioned Tukey Williams, I mentioned Larry Hoover, all mm-hmm. like people who were incarcerated currently or were killed by the police, you feel me?
Yeah.
In terms of trying to better their communities.
And that was one thing I was actually going to bring up, but you kind of beat me to it, was that we particularly liked your line, a lot of thugs cried just for me to get a break. Mm-hmm. That's profound, you yeah. know, absolutely.
And that's a standpoint that I stand on, is that we all, as a black community, it doesn't matter how far in the reaches or marginality in the black community, we all have to come together because we still are, no matter what we are, we're viewed as a threat on site. Mm-hmm. We have to find a way to change that narrative. And for people, when it comes to things like protests and stuff like that, where, you know, people are automatically being like, oh, well, this happened at the protest, so that makes it a riot, and none of that, you know, maybe a couple people, you know, people like, when I think about protests and stuff like that and talk about it, it's like, if somebody was at the protest and they stole some shoes, they came to steal some shoes, that they're not there for the protest.
Yeah.
You feel me? People that were there protesting before everything got hectic and stuff like that, the reason that they were out there to begin with, that's what you got to think of. You can't think about the chaos because the chaos is instigated on both sides.
Well, chaos happens from number of people.
Exactly.
You know? I mean, yeah, absolutely.
But it also happens on both sides. I've seen it. I was at protests mm-hmm. watching it happen live. I watched people, you know, on Fifth Ave try to break the windows down when we're all right next to the line of police and we're sitting there trying to stop people. Like, bro, why are you acting wild like this? You know, but at the same time, watching the police, you know, throw things out of, from what I'm seeing things coming out of windows and things get launched, you know, all sorts of things happening. It's instigation on both sides. When it boils down to that violence, mm-hmm. it shouldn't have been treated the way that it was treated to begin with. And that's where you got to start about the problem. You can't look at the end result every time mm-hmm. and be like, oh, it was some wild shit. It was instigated, maybe on both sides, but still, you shouldn't have addressed the problem the way you addressed it. You shouldn't have showed up to a protest full of people in riot gear.
Exactly. If there's no reason for there to, you know,
you're addressing the situation as a threat off bat.
Yeah.
How are we supposed to feel?
They're coming in like armored trucks and shit, like
with, really? Against people with umbrellas. Like,
yeah.
when you see that type of stuff, it's like you got to like sit and you got to really think. It's like, how is that really? What message are you giving off? Are you giving off the message that you really want to come for peace and you want to protect people, or are you giving off the message that we're here to bash in heads and anybody who's against what we're for is the problem? And that's the way of thinking that we have to really break down.
Show up in your uniforms, holster your weapons, stand
don't
there and keep the
badges.
Peace. Don't cover your fucking badges.
Don't turn off the body cams. There's a lot of mistrust from the black community when it comes to police. And that's what the basis of that song was, is that you're viewing us as a threat, but in reality, we're just trying to live. We're just trying to survive.
Absolutely.
And everybody's going to do whatever it takes to survive.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me? You can't base a person. You can't really justify a person's morality based upon their situation without thinking about their situation.
Mm-hmm.
You look at the actions, but did you really look at the situation? Where are you coming from? Were you coming from dirt?
Mm-hmm.
Or are you coming from silver spoon? Everything's safe.
Exactly. All right, man. Well, we're here at the end, and we got my favorite one coming up here. So this is a Frosted Lemon.
Lemon Frost is a sativa-dominant strain known for its energetic and uplifting high and its rich flavor of lemon peels and tangy sweetness. We found a gram of these diamonds at a shop in Capitol Hill.
To me, this one kind of tastes like almost like a lemon cake, kind of. So for our last one here, different regions of the country have their own hip-hop sound. We have the Dirty South, New York, L.A. How would you define the Seattle hip-hop sound? And would you consider your music as representative of the Seattle sound?
I don't want to say I'm the representative for the Seattle sound. Like in my sound, you know, the sound of what I produce. Like, I don't want to say that's like indicative of what the PNW produces, because I don't really feel like we have our own sound. Like, I feel like, and I also feel like, you know, how they say like hip hop is genreless at this point, is like, these pockets of places don't necessarily have a sound anymore. They have influence. Of course, you're going to hear influence of, you know, what they did. But in the PNW, we don't really have a lot of, like, you know, if you want to, like, classify them as, like, the mainstream artists who established, you know, mm-hmm. Washington. There's a lot of people who've come out of Washington.
Oh, yeah.
And you still don't be like, think of it like, you know, if you think of Seattle, like off the top of your head, you could say a couple of names, you feel me?
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot more, you know, than the average outside listener would know, you know, could we can name a whole lot more people because we've been in the scene, you know, as people
sure.
who are trying to establish our own name in the scene, you end up going to a lot of shows. And you end up seeing a whole lot of different people. You end up meeting a whole lot of different people mm-hmm. in the scene. And so it's like, excuse me, you're not necessarily, you know, thinking of people who are making the PNW, you feel me? Like, there's nobody who's really, like, broken us onto the big map. There's a lot of people coming out now. I feel like Seattle is going to be in one of those pockets that the you know, the New York, so the East Coast and the LA and the Dirty mm-hmm. South and all those type of pockets. I think we're building ourselves up to be one of those pretty soon. But I think right now there isn't really a pocket of the PNW that's really like, not a pocket of the PNW. There's not really any names from the PNW that really like you could
put us on the map, you know.
Definitively say this.
We all sound so different.
Yeah. Oh, sure. We I all think that's kind of one of our, you know, one of the good things about it, though.
And that's what
know?
I was going to say as well, is like, if we really were to like be, you know, one of those main hubs, it would really have to encompass everything from, I'm not familiar with any hip hop artists from Idaho, but I know a lot of hip hop artists from Spokane in that area. So like, you know, from the Spokane area all the way down to, you know, the Portland and those kind of areas, like that's all the PNW. Like, we don't really have like a Seattle or anything. Everybody kind of like fucks with everybody from everywhere, and we all know who each other are. We might not know as many as other people know. Everybody who we know in those specific hubs probably could name a whole lot more people from that area than somebody from outside of it, but we all like kind of collaborate and talk, and you know, we reach out. Like, our network is a lot more than like just the Seattle area. And so when it comes to the PNW, like, it really would have to be the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
The Pacific Northwest is our hub. And so, you know, it's really, at that point, it's sort of experimental, because, like, what I'm saying is that nobody sounds the same.
Sure.
You know, there's a whole lot of different sounds coming out of the area. And so when you listen to it, you're not really, there's nothing really that's going to sound exactly, you know, there's not really going to be too many of, we don't have something like The Dungeon, where, you know, Outkast and those kind of people who birthed the Dirty South sound kind of came out of. We don't have something like that. We're creating something like that with the Seattle Sessions and some and the things that have been going on. There's definitely some activity going on that is going to birth this PNW scene that you're going to be seeing over the next 5 to 10 years. Like, that's I imagine it's just going to expansively grow, and it's just like not going to look like it's going to stop anytime soon. There's so much creative juice flowing through the Pacific Northwest. That is
Hey guys, thank you so much for watching. Remember to hit like or follow, and share with your friends.